And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. I have Seth Rodney in the studio with me tonight. Seth is an art writer from based in New York, originally born in Jamaica, but in New York now for most of your life in the Bronx, and got his PhD to marry his love of the written word and art together. And poetry as well. I thought that was actually very beautiful when you read the Sylvia. No, you didn't even read it. You just brought it out of your head, which is just like
I have a lot of Sylvia Plath in my head.
I know, and I'm kind of like, oh, they make me feel so dumb. But and poetry and bringing not only writing about art, but writing about art in a way that's also about writing, which I think is really interesting. And I think it's a skill that we're losing. Do you feel that? Do you feel that as a writer, criticism is less and less? I feel like the curator has taken over the role that the writer used to play.
And the PR person. I mean, the PR representative. I think a lot of our... And I see it more clearly really in the realm of politics. I see that when we make public pronouncements and essentially, a PR release is a public announcement saying, here's this artist, here's this exhibition, here's this event, la, la, la. But in the realm of politics, when you have the kinds of statements being put out, and I'm talking specifically about the U.S. context, when you have statements being put out by various agencies within the government and by the executive in particular that are just obfuscatory. They just obfuscate. They're just meant to hide what is actually happening in the back room. I always want to say that art writing should be about what's happening in the back room. It should be about what's happening in the front room, certainly, but also what's happening in the back room. Because I'm not here to write your press release. I'm not here to promote your work. Absolutely what I'm not about. And I think that PR, yes, curators definitely have, eaten up some of the territory that art writers and art critics used to essentially control. But PR companies as well, you know, they are hired by galleries and by museums to essentially, quote unquote, put out their message. But what happens is their message is all sort of here's the face that we want to to present to the world. But what's behind that face, what's behind that mask, is essentially a mask, is for me far more interesting than just the sort of facade you're presenting me. Arts writers, I think they have a responsibility to do that, to tell me what's behind the mask. Because If you trust most of what you read in press releases and then go see the show, you're like, what the hell is this? Like, what happened? Like, you told me this was going to happen, that I was going to have this epiphany, or that this work came out of this rigorous reimagining of the social realm. You show up and it's like a duck spinning around a fire extinguisher. And I'm like, no, it's not, no, that is not what happened. And I will tell you what happened.
You made actually a beautiful metaphor at the NAGB about what you want your writing to do in terms of the lake and the kind of connectivity.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was very beautiful.
Oh yeah.
Again, I just want to ask for the listeners, like, what is it that you want to achieve? Like, why do you write about art?
Right. I think because there's a couple of reasons, but there's one thing that's occurring to me. It's a poem by Mark Doty. It's called Difference, and I think it was... He wrote that in the late 80s, maybe early 90s. I think it was maybe, I found it in a 1993 copy of The Best American Poetry. And I won't recite the whole poem because it's quite long, but I'm not sure that I remember it all, but there's a line where the poem really takes you through this the underwater, sort of underwater view of these jellyfish that are morphing into all kinds of creatures in front of the speaker's eyes. And he describes them by resorting to sort of regular, by sort of quotidian language, like this one a troubled parasol, and this submarine opera's all subterfuge and disguise, this plot of fabulous tangle of hiding and recognition, nothing but style. And he describes these jellyfish as sort of moving in and out of these recognizable forms, like Tiffany Shade or Rolled Condom. And he says towards the end of the poem, we look at alien grace, unfettered by any determined form, and we say, heart, balloon, condom, opera, lampshade, parasol, ballet, hear how the mouth in longing for the world changes its shape. And I think that at art writing at its best does that. Like, it looks at alien grace and it says, here's a word that you can hold on to, by which you can grasp that thing that is so astonishingly beautiful and strange and sort of beyond our ken. But you have access to it through this language that we art writers are giving it. Right, mm-hmm. We're giving you a conduit to get to that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that thing can take you someplace else. I think that that's super valuable. I think that people can take that for granted. But honestly, when you read great art writing, when you read great writing, period, you feel that transport. You feel it. Mm-hmm. I felt it when I first read René Ricard's Radiant Child, that essay that he wrote about Jean-Michel Basquiat. I mean, just where he starts off with the essay, he just starts talking about seeing these tags all over town, and then he goes into a whole thing where he talks about the history and about Jean-Michel Basquiat being sort of representative of the kind of Van Gogh character that nobody wanted to miss. Like, everybody wanted to be on that train because you don't want to like get it too late.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, raw, strange essay that does what a PR release cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And what curators generally cannot do is that they generally aren't able to do that thing where they're able to translate that amorphous, weird, difficult experience into something that the rest of us can have access to.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when you've written something that's really good?
I do, like, sometimes it's, like, I get that feeling, like, I oh, yeah, when I wrote the Kerry James Marshall review, I was so, when I finished it, I was like, that's it. Like, that's it right there, that last line. And when I sent it over, this was 2 years ago, I think it was fall of 2017, I wrote that, which, by the way, was not the last good thing I wrote, but, you know, it came to mind. I sent it over to Prague to edit, and he wrote me back one sentence. He was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And I knew, because what I'd done, and I mean, that one I think I largely operated on intuition.
Well, I was going to say, it probably is, though. That's what was going to be my question, is it something that you follow your belly on?
Well, here's the thing, right? On some I do, and some mm-hmm. I have to be really rigorous with myself, and I know it's not done. Like, there's some that are just... I just fight tooth and nail to get out. Like, it just isn't right. And then actually I depend on the editor to like call me on my bullshit. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh, this section here isn't quite, you haven't really grasped. Like, and I'm like, thank you, because mm-hmm. you're right. With the Kerry James Marshall thing, I tethered it essentially to this poem by Audre Lorde called Cole. And there's a last line, and I tethered the last few lines to this realization I had. Thank you to my friend Stephen Fullwood for pointing this out, because he happened to be at the show at the same time I was.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, there's this section where Marshall chose all these works from the permanent collection to sort of, I don't know, talk about, contrast with, support his own work. And none of the artists he chose were women. None. And I'm just like, there's no justification for that. But there's a line in the Audre Lorde poem to Cole towards the end where he says, Which basically she talks about I is a total. She talks about blackness being this I being spoken from the earth's inside. And I ended the essay by saying, sometimes you should not say I, you need to say we. And I knew that was the line that needed to end the essay. Mm. And so it was intuitive. And I knew that when I was finished, I knew it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there are ones that you really struggle with. I know that. That sometimes you just... Yeah.
It just doesn't come.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't, and you have to sort of like knock your head against the wall or go take a really long walk or go take a hot shower.
Mm-hmm.
And then stuff eventually kind of loosens up and it comes back to you. Mm-hmm. I have to tell listeners this, that it's really important to admit this. I still get afraid. Like, not afraid of the blank page, because I don't typically get writer's block. I'm afraid of screwing it up.
Mm.
I know I can say something. I know I can write something. I just don't want it to be generic, and I don't want it to be dumb. I don't want it to be lazy.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be insightful every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm worried that I'm going to screw it up, and it's not going to be insightful. It's going to be kind of
bland,
boneheaded.
Or surface, or yeah. We also spoke just now about the importance of the editing process and how important it is to have a good editor. As an editor of other people's work now, how difficult is that as a writer too? Is that something you bring to doing that work? Does it think it gives you an insight into the process that...
Sort of. Sort of insight. To be honest, it's slightly easier for me to edit typically than it is to write.
Mm-hmm.
Because here, I generally speaking, have a pretty coherent set of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to prune a lot of the times. I have to say, well, this section doesn't quite work, or you need to expand on this phrase because I don't know what this means.
Mm-hmm.
There are some difficult cases, and I should actually just quickly run through them. People who use art speak too damn much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, is it materiality or is it materials? Right? Like, what are you really getting after?
Mm-hmm. No, I've actually even Googled that. Like, occasionally, I'm like, what does that actually mean? Like, is it me? Like, that I don't... Yeah.
Positionality?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. People who have really good ideas, but they just render them in really incoherent ways. Like, that's... It can take me hours sometimes to edit some people I get. Because they are... The ideas are there, but they're just buried under so much mush.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are the other really difficult cases? No, those are pretty much it. Like, where they just haven't worked out the ideas yet. And I want to emphasize here, too, that there are some very good writers who occasionally do that as well, because they're dealing with something that is really difficult and they don't have a handle on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That is okay.
Because it's also very hard to write to deadline. I mean, I was also a writer, and sometimes you're just like, wow, I have to, you know, if I had another week and I could take more long walks and I could read it again. Because also sometimes you write something, you think it's okay, but you need like a day to not look
at
it and then go back and read it. Because when you're in it, you don't see it. You don't see it. And sometimes
Absolutely.
You just don't have enough time. And that's why the editor can be your friend.
Yes, it's crucial. Absolutely. And I mean, I... do rely on my editors to tell me, again, to be that person slightly outside of my mind and say, here's where I think it's working, here's where I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm.
They are critical to the process. And I want to say, yes, writing to deadline is difficult. I can probably count on one hand, how many times I've not done this. Most times I give myself at least 2 days to write something. Write a rough draft, next day I can maybe finish it. If it's longer, it may take me 3 or 4 days. Probably less than 5 pieces that I've written for Hyperallergic. I've written, I don't know, over 300 now, I think.
Mm.
Probably 5 or less I've written in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And those I'm actually not so sure they were great,
mm-hmm.
but they needed to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because time generally is your friend.
No, mm-hmm. right, exactly.
Do people get upset when you're editing their work sometimes?
So
you don't have to name names. I'm just saying, like, what is
yeah,
it?
No. I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. Yeah. I'm a pro.
Or do people like appreciate it?
Most people do. Yeah. I'd say 95% of the writers I've dealt with are really appreciative. Like, mm-hmm. they get it, and I think generally my edits are the kinds of edits that preserve the writer's voice. I'm not trying to take over their stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm not trying to call them stupid, mm-hmm. and they recognize that. Mm-hmm. There have been on occasion, and I've dealt with some prominent writers who've done this, who've pushed back on me, and then I've pushed back, and they kind of start to get territorial and rude. Mm-hmm. So I've had a couple writers who has responded to my edits with, well, not sure I agree with you on this, and I don't know why you're insisting that I do. They start to take umbrage. Mm-hmm. And honestly, because I deal with it so, mm-hmm. I deal with that so rarely, mm-hmm. it's not that burdensome mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. I typically do have a quick conversation with Farag just to let him know, let mm-hmm. him be on the same page and say,
This is going on here.
Yeah, yeah. Farag, this person is giving me pushback. This person doesn't know what he or she is doing with this particular piece, and this is what they're saying to me, and this is how I'm responding, mm-hmm. just so he knows. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, it's actually one of the ways that I've been able to track my own emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. I think when I was in my 30s, I would not have done this job as well. Mm-hmm. But now, my ego is really not on the line when I edit someone. Mm-hmm. I recognize it is just a job. It is just mm-hmm. a piece of writing. And if someone doesn't like what I'm doing, and I've actually had someone do something really rude to me. The edit was finished, and it was posted, and it was like 4 or 5 days later, and he sent me an email that said, "You mean to tell me that this was posted on Friday and I'm just finding out about it now?" And I wrote him back and I said, "To be clear, it's not our job to tell you when things are posted. Most of us are busy, so it's hard for us to do that with all the writers we work with. And 3, you can't speak to me like that. Mm. That's just not okay." Mm. And there was some back and forth. But I stuck to my guns and I said, you know, blank, I'm not upset. It's mm-hmm. it's okay. Yeah, it, exactly. Right, you don't have to work with me anymore. Yeah. But here's the deal, like, that can't happen.
But I think, you know, you're right that it is about emotional maturity, whether you're writing or producing art or really doing anything. Being open to criticism that is given in the right spirit.
Yes.
Is, again, I suppose it's a sign of, like, our growth, right? And I think I always say, like, my very best friends were the people that told me some of the hardest things in you know, as I was growing up. Like, okay, right. Like, sweetie, you got to dial that back. You know, and sometimes it's hard, but a lot of it, and I'm sorry that we've only got 2 minutes left, but you spoke to that in the beginning and then other conversations, which is trust. Like, that you build up a sense of trust as a writer, that people are following what you read, or as an editor working with people. And I think that's really one of the key things, right, is developing a trust so that if you have to say something that maybe is a harder thing to say, there's enough generosity that it's being done from a place where you want to make, again, you want to add value, or you want to, yeah.
And there's one particular writer I just want to shout out in the vein of giving this some specificity. Sarah Bond is someone who wrote some polychromy. She's a classicist, I think, at the University of Iowa. I know she's in Iowa, but I'm not sure what the particular institution. Forgive me, Sarah. But she is a brilliant writer, a brilliant thinker. And there are moments in the text that I work with on her, where things aren't quite right, and then we have questions about stuff, and there's so much trust now between us, and it's just easy, like, mm-hmm. we just believe in each other. She believes in my work, I believe in her work, and it's great because she knows that I'm never going to edit something or bring up something that I think is questionable because of my ego. Mm-hmm. Never. And she trusts me for that, and it makes it a really great working relationship. And it's the kind of relationships I want to cultivate with people more.
Me too. And on that, that's a nice place to end.
Yes.
So I'm sorry we don't have another hour. It's always the last 20 minutes gets really good, and we're like, oh, we got another hour. Yeah. But I want to thank you so much for sharing the time with us.
Indeed. I'm just glad to be here, Amanda. Thank you for inviting me.
You're so welcome. It was great to have you. So that was Seth Rodney. Seth is a writer from New York, and you can read some of his writing on Hyperallergic. Which is, I think it's just www.hyperallergic.com, right?
That's correct.
Which is HyperallergiC.com. And follow other writers as well. It's a really interesting website for staying connected, you know, to the world. So if you're interested in art and culture and how things are all over, then go read that. And that's really it. We don't have any more time, so just go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs, and see what else we have coming up. I'm afraid to say you missed the talk with Seth Rodney, but we will have more talks coming up. We have movies. Tomorrow night we have a movie, a screening of The Raisin in the Sun, in honor of Sidney Poitier's, I think it's 94th birthday or something. So come on out to that. It's always free. And other than that, we'd love to see you at the NAGB. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great night.